The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 4 podcast.
Later in the program, we will talk to a couple of college reporters, something we have begun doing, and really take great pride in getting to know the future.
Gene Sapikoff's, and I'm talking long way in the future. Great to see you.
Thanks for having me, Paul. It's great to be here.
I don't get to talk to too many people of my generation in sports writing, but you've been doing this how long?
So far, just 40 years in the business, Paul. But, you know, I'll tell you, I love you doing the thing with the college reporters. I think that's really good for the young folks and just, you know, the business, which I care about, journalism business, manage some beat writers at Clemson and in Columbia, so that are a little bit younger than me, 30 or 40 years younger than me. It's a great thing.
I get really inspired by it, and I was talking to you off the air about a trip to a college campus last summer, and I just came back beaming because there just isn't a lot of that going on in places like this. I mean, college kids are, you know, they don't realize how jaded the system gets once they get out of school.
And yet the talent and diversity is wonderful, exciting, and inspiring. I mean, I get as inspired by 20-year-olds as, people like you, Paul.
Yeah.
Almost so.
So let's talk for a second about Carolina, because Shane Beamer was here, and he's so polished, and it just seems like he's on this track. I did ask him today, though, Gene. I said, Carolina fans are really happy, but they're also okay. Well, you know, we probably can't do a whole lot better than this. And I don't think he liked that, but he's coached there, and there is this mentality that you get to this level. And, you know, the Spurrier years may have been more of an aberration than a norm.
Yeah, and there's the rub. South Carolina this year, Paul, is going to be a better team. They have more talent. They are better coached. The staff is smarter. They will be much, much more exciting to watch with Spencer Rattler at quarterback. And yet, I don't know if they can get above 7-6 this year, maybe 8 wins at most. And that's because last year, I mean, they took advantage of the two SEC dumpster fires at Auburn and Florida and won those games by double digits, in which they entered as underdogs. And, Paul, they had three really weird close games, East Carolina, Troy, and Vanderbilt, that they struggled to win. So this year, I mean, they have to replace wins over Auburn and Florida with games at Arkansas and at Florida.
Wow.
So that's just a tough thing for them, and it's just a rugged neighborhood that they live in with Georgia and Clemson.
And there's always Texas A&M.
Absolutely.
Which doesn't make things very easy. Gene, I know you're heading out of here to go to ACC Media Days, and you've covered that event a long time. You live in a market, to work in a market that's, I don't know, it's fairly evenly divided, I guess, between Clemson and South Carolina. But it just seems to me that in spite of whatever we hear from the commissioner or Dabo Sweeney or anyone else tomorrow, this is a serious moment for the ACC.
There's absolutely no doubt about it. And I've had former Clemson board members tell me that same thing. This next few months, at least this next year or so, is going to be absolutely fascinating on both the SEC and some of those ACC sides. I mean, to me, the two most interesting things that Greg Sankey said yesterday is, one, that he's all for a playoff with only at-large entries.
Right.
First of all, that was what a shot at the ACC and the Pac-12 and the Big 12 that was. And secondly, in talking about possible expansions, we're good with 16, but also talking and going on about how great the geography and the like-minded schools was when they added Oklahoma and Texas, and then said, and we need to be nimble. Well, who else could he be talking about but the likes of North Carolina, Clemson, Miami, and Florida State?
And, I mean, as you try to play the board games and do the math on what could happen next, you have to be wise enough to think that Notre Dame is unlikely to come to the SEC. This relationship with the ACC, though, has to be in serious jeopardy, though, because my question is, why has the ACC, even when Notre Dame needed them 2 years ago, why have they been unable to bring the Irish in football?
Well, up until now, they haven't been willing to go to some sort of stratified revenue sharing thing, which that's the only way to get Notre Dame in. And it might be the only way to save some of the schools I just mentioned.
Right.
And that would be that you're going to get more of a piece of the pie based on how you've recently done in football. And that, of course, would rattle some of the rest of the ACC, and maybe justifiably so, because that's what kind of led to the demise of the Big 12. People jealous about, you know, Texas and so forth, as you well know.
It seems like a terrible way to do business when you're having to do that, and it defeats everything that commissioners say on day one of events like this. And I don't know how the commissioner of the ACC, who I think we can all get this out of the way. I really liked him a lot, and I thought he did a great job at Northwestern. But what has this guy done as a commissioner of the ACC?
Well, right out of the gate, he stepped in it by not only not going for the 12-team playoff, which it looks like that was the best deal they could have had with Greg Sankey firing that shot across the bow yesterday, too. But he went on and on, and had to be the poster guy for saying why he didn't, and we're more concerned about the holistic view of college football before we're concerned about the playoff. And so, yeah, that was a big mistake, and he's off to a bad start, and there's just no way to gloss over that.
I hate to say this about a guy I know well, and is a smart guy, and is a very, very thoughtful guy. But let's be honest. I mean, Jim Phillips looked like a moron after that move, the other move you just got through, saying, and then standing up there that day a year ago, forming the alliance with the Pac-12 and the Big Ten, when we just got through seeing Kevin Warren put a knife in the back of the Pac-12.
Well, it'll be interesting tomorrow, Paul, because Jim Phillips has his State of the ACC address in Charlotte in the morning. So
count me in.
We'll kind of see what he says, but it'll be pretty fascinating. Hopefully he gets some probative questions.
Well, you never know, because it seems to me, Gene, as we go veer back into the journalism aspect of this, that we have reporters now who, wherever they are, and of course you've been a both, they tend to carry the water for whatever league they're covering.
Yeah, pretty much. It only takes a few good people doing questions. David Teal out of Virginia will ask some good questions, I'm pretty sure. I hope that the Charleston Post and Courier has put forward some good questions in the past. But yeah, but generally speaking, it's not a good journalism room when people are wearing school colors.
I mean, you've worked for a newspaper that's been around a long time, has a great reputation. But can you afford today in the world of journalism covering a beat like the beats that we talk about here in the ACC and the SEC and be probative, like the generation before us and a lot of what we saw, at least from the better part of our newspaper careers? You've been in it much longer than I have, because I got out.
This is a great question for journalism, 400 level class, because to tell you the truth, it's costly. I mean, when you depend on web hits and you're depending on a rabid fan base for interaction, it can be costly, but I'm going to do it. I mean, I'm going to still be probative, and I think there's enough people out there. And again, like we talked about to open this segment, Paul, I'm inspired by young journalists and their willingness to be gutsy out there.
I am too, but I am not sure, Gene, I'm inspired by not their bosses, who I think are very high quality people, but by the people that run newspaper companies.
Well, we'd probably prefer to be thought of as news gathering organizations,
yeah, right,
or website companies,
sure,
now, because it really is a web first thing throughout. But you're absolutely right. I mean, they're looking at the bottom line, and sometimes it's very corporate. And, some TV people actually work for Disney too, and they have to be conscious of things like that. So we'll just have to see how it goes over the future.
I am having a hearing problem right now. But you're right. And I find it interesting lately, because one of the biggest themes in college football isn't conference realignment, but it's now the battle that is looming between Disney the owners of ESPN and Fox, which have the Big Ten and other their tentacles in other places. Now, and how do you cover that story? And I'm sure I'll be in somebody's office tomorrow morning. How do you cover that story when you work for them?
It's tough, but from my perspective, I don't know how it's really going to be done at ESPN and Fox. I think maybe covering each other can be kind of helpful. It's interesting to see who breaks stories about what, and maybe SportsIllustrated.com comes in with some good stuff. But for one thing, I know about Disney, and I was just talking to some very high-placed people here this morning about Greg Sankey's comments, and Disney wants a good show. That's what they're famous for at their theme parks or television or Disney Plus or whatever. And you know what that means? They don't want to see Wake and Pitt or Cal and Washington State.
No.
They want to see really good matchups. That's the key to the expansion going forward, I think, and that's going to be the key in how the SEC moves about.
Well, one final question, because I always liked John Swofford, the just retired commissioner of the ACC. Again, these are collegial people. They don't get and hang on for as long as they did. But it seems like many are now pointing toward his deal with the aforementioned network as really being what is causing all the heartburn right now. Did he make the best deal at the time, or was he not looking down the road like others before? And by the way, the SEC had a similar deal. I'm not trying to sugarcoat it here. And they're still trying to wait for the expiration date.
Time's going to tell. I hate to put it that way because, I like to make future predictions and things like that. But the other thing with John Swofford is this grant of rights thing that he got people to sign up on. And that's going to be really a dicey thing going forward for both the SEC, ACC, Big Ten, anybody else that wants to try to carve up the Atlantic Coast Conference.
Well done. We will be eagerly watching, assuming that you pay the fee at your newspaper to be able to read your column. We'll be eagerly following what you we'll be eagerly following tomorrow what you have to say after the new commissioner of the ACC meets the media.
Thanks a lot for having me, Paul. Appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you, dude. It's always a pleasure.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to Amazon.com/ESPN Pods. That's Amazon.com/ESPN Pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And we're back. Mike Rodek from AL.com joining us. And it's always great to have conversations with guys who who cover beats. We've gotten a little bit heavy into journalism tonight with our previous guest, but you cover Alabama. That sounds like quite an exciting beat.
It is.
What's it like?
I've covered the NFL for almost 10 years before that, and it's similar because you feel like you're covering an NFL program, but it's different because there's a lot more control at Alabama, and there's not the sort of laws and rules that the NFL has to allow you access and allow you to watch practice and allow you to talk to every player. Nick Saban doesn't allow us to talk to freshmen, doesn't allow us to talk to assistant coaches, so it's a much more controlled environment than trying to cover the NFL.
So not to sound like a journalism professor here, you know, with gray hair, not possible, and a tweed suit, but what do you do if you can't really talk to anyone, and every time you talk to Nick Saban, you could sit at home and watch it on TV or Zoom?
Just try to do your best and provide the best perspective that you can, and just provide the facts that you can, and work around the edges as much as you can. But in some cases, you just can't do much. You can't break into practice and watch practice. You can just try to use your knowledge that you have about the team and the historical knowledge that you have, and try to apply it to the present. But there is a certain limit that just based on, you use your eyes as journalists. If you can't use your eyes to watch things, then you're relying on other people and what their eyes might see, which is risky as well.
I'll try to act like I don't know what it's like covering the greatest coach in college football history, but I thought I was at one time, and it turned out that was an incorrect moment in time to cement that. But I was in awe of being around Paul Bryant. You could snicker to your friends that you didn't get a lot of access, but guess what? You actually did. I would call him every Monday, ask questions. He didn't answer them well, but there was a communication. You could call him and he would return the call. Mm-hmm. You could go to see him in his office. He loved to toss a few back with reporters. I'm assuming this isn't Nick Saban.
No, and I don't think that's probably most of the game in general.
No,
either.
I know.
Just the way that the world has changed. I remember hearing stories from NFL writers that PR people would travel from the visiting team to their home city and just pass out media guides and try to promote the game. You don't need to promote the game, whether it's the NFL or college football these days, because it's so big and there's so much money involved anyway. So some of that access, I think, is lost when coaches don't feel the need to be reaching out to you and to sort of have that relationship. So I think that it's probably a wider issue than just Alabama and just Nick Saban, but that's the direction the business has gone.
Yeah,
you just have to adjust.
And I want to be clear, and I'm glad you said that. I don't think it's any different anywhere else in the mm-hmm. SEC. It's such a big business now that the message is getting out anyway. Mm-hmm. So you are just responsible for a small piece of that.
Right, exactly. And I think it's try to differentiate then, because it's so ubiquitous. You can get information from a million different websites on the internet. It's trying to, as a journalist yourself, trying to differentiate by providing that analysis, the perspective of just being around it in a way that maybe somebody sitting at a desk on the other side of the country might not see, just having seen a tweet or having seen a small snippet of a quote.
Talking to Mike Rodak from AL.com, and Alabama is covered just like Auburn, just like all these other schools. They're covered extensively. There are, great pieces that you guys do, and I remember talking to somebody. I can't remember. I think it was covering Florida at one point or some school, and the first thing you started doing was complaining about the coverage. And quite frankly, the audience is not concerned about that.
Right, and that's sort of the difference between fans and the media sometimes too, is that fans want to hear a certain angle of it, and obviously our aim, our goal as media is to provide the middle, essentially, not necessarily one side of the issue or the other. So, you can't always just look for what fans necessarily want to hear, and that's the danger there.
By the time Nick Saban gets here, I suspect you've heard it all. I had somebody tell me today they were shocked by his comment about the $3 million. I think I've heard that a dozen times.
Right.
You probably heard it 10 dozen times. But that's just the difference in what you pick up on a day-to-day basis versus a big room like this.
So actually the first time that he mentioned that was at that World Games event, in which he had the much more, covered comments about Texas A&M, but he did mention within that little snippet that it was 25 players who earned $3 million. And I would imagine that Bryce Young is close to half of that amount. So, you know, he's used that throughout the summer. I try to listen to as many interviews as I can. It wasn't exactly news when he said it today, but, you know, I do wonder, and he said that NIL is not an issue for Alabama, but I still think when you compare them to teams in bigger cities that can draw an A&M drawing from Houston or Miami in that market, or Georgia drawing from Atlanta, you don't quite have the same base, the same corporate base that Alabama can draw from. So you do wonder, it levels the playing field. I don't think Alabama's ahead in the NIL game. No. Because of what they have in Birmingham or what they have in the state of Alabama. And that's probably an issue for them going forward.
And Mike, there seems to be, because it's Alabama, that Nick Saban can snap his fingers. But that was lost in the, not so much what Saban said, but what happened a couple hours later, that you were in the room. Mm-hmm. What was he trying to convey to those group of business people?
Well, I think it was just that. I think it was the fact that there are other schools who can compete with Alabama from a recruiting standpoint because of what he said is now essentially illegal, and he's talked about it a million times now as far as NIL. And I think there's certainly people in that room with some deep pockets in Birmingham who were involved with the World Games, which is why they were there, and essentially trying to send the message that they need to step up. And I think another part that was lost was Nate Oates was there, the basketball coach.
Right.
As well. He was saying a lot of the same things about how NIL is being used in recruiting on the basketball side and how Alabama essentially needs to get a little bit further ahead in that game, which is speaking to the choir in that room, people who have businesses and have some money to spare that can potentially be used to pay players. Now, when you say pay players, obviously there's a fine line between paying players to come there and just paying players to, you know, to market them or for them to market themselves. So that's sort of the line that they walked in on that room. But I think both of them understand that there's a leveling of playing field that is happening there.
Mike, before you go, you're a reporter. Your job is to cover things. Do you feel responsible for creating the biggest story of the year in college football?
No, I'm just simply simply taking my notebook and taking notes and using my recorder. And that's our charge as reporters.
I mean, there was no choice. I mean,
right.
You heard exactly what we've all heard ad infinitum.
Right, and I think a lot of people, too, might miss that there was four TV cameras from Birmingham. All the local TV stations were there, the Tuscaloosa News were there. We were there as AOL.com. It wasn't just me simply in that room, you know, hiding in a corner, listening to Nick Saban and tweeting at him. We were in plain sight. They could see us. He knew we were there.
And the moderator of the evening is a media member, Jim Dunaway. I mean, he asked a question.
Right. And I think there was probably an expectation on their part that we wouldn't be there at the end of it. It was the very end of this event. I think it was purposely placed at the end of the event, thinking that we weren't going to be there. But we were still there, and nobody ever came and said, you need to leave. And again, that's journalism. That's what we have to do, and we did our jobs.
Well, fortunately, the World Games came and went and was a big success, so that night did not do any damage to the World Games. It may have had a big impact on the college football world, though.
Yeah, that might be the lasting legacy of the World Games in Birmingham and in the state of Alabama. The thing I'll remember most, at least, about the World Games being here.
Yeah. I hope Nick Saban, you know, attended on a nightly basis just to support the group. I'm sure he didn't. Mike, thank you. I could question you all day, and who knows. We appreciate you coming by, and good luck this fall with the Crimson. Oh, they're going to win it all, aren't they?
Is there a football thing we're covering here today? I forget. It seems like we haven't, but that's the world we live in, right?
Great stuff. Thank you so much.
You got it.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Welcome back. It's great to have you here. Final couple of moments. Michael Sauls and Ashley Woods join us. They're student reporters at South Carolina and Alabama. We have spoken to both of them before, and we hope to continue the conversation. And it is great to see you guys. Ashley, this is the first time you have covered this august event. So tell us all about it.
Yeah, it's been a fun time to have the chance to do this again, do this for the first time, I'm sorry. I missed out on it last year due to COVID, but I'm excited to be here in person, get to talk to Nick Saban, Will, Bryce, and Jordan today. So it's been really fun to just meet and network and work this event.
Yeah, I can only imagine. You know, I try to remember being a student and how bug-eyed I was about everything I did and in that respect, Michael, I know it's a job. I mean, you're doing something very serious that not only affects your colleagues, but affects your future. So how do you approach something like this?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. You know, you've got to toe the line of being a student and a journalist, a professional at the same time. So, you know, you can be a fan in your time off when you're a student, and then, you know, you get into the real world, you can't really do that. So you got to come and approach this. You know, we're Ashley and I are both here working, so we can't really, you know, have any fan moments. So we got to, you know, control ourselves and act like we've been here before. And I like to think we both have done a pretty good job of that.
Well, I had a fan moment today, and I'm not supposed to do that either, but I was walking to go do another interview. I had to go up there and across somewhere toward the hotel, and I ran smack into Bryce Young. And he said hello, and he'd been on the show before, and I talked to him for a couple of minutes, and I have to tell you, I was starstruck. I mean, it's really, Saban, I've seen a few times, but I haven't been around Bryce Young very much, and how impressive he was, Ashley. It was just so neat to see him.
Yeah, he's like a really impressive guy to be around. He has this captivating aura that when you do see him, you're like, you got to take a step back and be like, oh, wow, this is really Bryce Young. He encapsulates everything that you hear about him. So when I saw him this morning, I kind of had to remind myself that I am working and that I have to be professional. But, you know, you kind of just see him walking around carrying himself, and it's just really fun to see.
I also passed Will Anderson on the way somewhere, and he looked. He kind of did a double take. I said, don't look at me. I don't want any part of you. You're too dangerous. He was on the show a couple weeks ago and was just extraordinary. And that goes for so many different athletes. Beamer was up here, and I know he is so popular, but I want to know what the students think and how they relate to a guy who is obviously much closer to them from an age standpoint than Spurrier 10 years ago, yeah. And even Will Muschamp a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I mean, he's popular. That's just simply put how it is. You know, he's very open with the student body. He's big on Twitter and everything. I mean, we saw today the TikTok that went viral already. So I mean, he's one of the cool kids, I guess you could put it. But the student body, as far as I'm concerned, loves him. I haven't really heard a single negative thing been said from any student about Beamer, and they're excited about him and the future of the program.
Let me talk to both of you about the industry. We just had a young reporter covers Alabama a minute ago, and before that, a grizzled veteran who's in his 40th year as a newspaper/media person. So as young college students, you're part of this new wave of reporting and communication and aggregation and all these other big words, which fortunately I don't really concern myself too much with anymore, being sitting in front of cameras and microphones. But give us an insider's view of the world of communications right now as a student at an age that young people aren't consuming like even 5 or 10 years ago they were.
You know, it's very interesting because everything is constantly changing. I started in the middle of COVID, so that was a very unique experience for me because I wasn't on the press. I wasn't in press conferences in person. Like, this year was like my first year being in person with people. And it's interesting to see how adaptive I got doing that, just changing how I report, changing how I talk about sports. It's been very interesting to be a part of this new wave. I think this new wave of student journalists that are coming in are just really excited to get into the sport, and they realize that there's a certain level of excitement that couldn't come with the sport and that should come as a media member. Of course, you don't want to be like out here fangirling and having starstruck moments and obviously rooting, but I think this is a very interesting time for students to come out because things are changing, the landscape is changing. It's allowed us to be more creative, I think, in my reporting, which excites me.
Yeah, I will say this to you, and I'm pretty hard-boiled when it comes to some of the things you just talked about, but you're still a student, though, and I don't think you can ever lose sight of the fact that you are not somebody that's done this for a long time and maybe has been, become too cynical. You should be wide open. I mean, your friends are Alabama fans or South Carolina fans. You do have to look at stories objectively, Michael. But there's no question who you want to win.
Yeah, I mean, you're a student. You're paying to go to this university. You would like to see the football team, the basketball team, women's basketball, any sport, you know, be successful. I think, you know, we're learning to be, you know, you can come into your reporting, you're objective in your reporting, but you can also have fun with it. So I think that's something that our generation has done really good at in these first couple of years. We're also being really good at being flexible. I mean, you come in my case, 2019 was my freshman year. You come in and, you know, you're learning this is how journalism works. And then we get hit with COVID and we got to throw half of it out the window and, you know, get flexible and adapt. So I think to your point, yeah, you know, students right now, we're students first. And we always think about that. And when our reporting, when that comes. But I mean, I think the future of journalism, I would like to think, is in good hands with us.
So Ashley, I was on your campus last year talking to your friends and colleagues and they're all peppering me afterwards about ESPN and other things. So I'm curious, because I've talked to you a couple of times about what you're doing now and how you view the future, but what are the desired jobs of young college journalists on the Alabama campus?
Yeah, I think it's a lot of variety of different jobs. People want to go into social media management. People want to go into local journalism. Some people want to do stuff that we're doing right now, being on TV, talking with you. And there's a wide variety of different things that they want to do, which I think is a great thing because Alabama provides the resources that you can do to be prepared for being a social media manager, being prepared to be in PR and journalism and stuff like that, which is really exciting. For me personally, local journalism has my heart, so right. Working for a local paper, eventually working up to get the chance to cover an NFL team would be the dream for me. But yeah, I think there's a lot of opportunities and a lot of different people want to do a lot of different things at Alabama, at least with what I met.
What about you, Michael?
I mean, I you know, at Carolina, we're lucky we have the sports media concentration that started up, I think, the year before I got to USC. So that's been huge for future sports journalists. A lot of people kind of have their eyes set on the national scale, whether that be, you know, Sports Illustrated, ESPN, name an outlet. For me, I'd like to get my start off in local beat writing. I'd like to think I've established myself as good as you can as a college student right now. And then, you know, maybe eventually move on to the national scale. Not too picky, you know, somebody offers me a job, I'm probably going to take it. But, you know, I think just the general, you know, sentiment among, you know, people our age right now is I think, you know, we like covering college sports. College sports are unique. And there's just something about them that, you know, is appealing to everybody.
Well, I will tell you guys, I'll never forget, you know, going to that press box at Neyland Stadium on Saturday and seeing these older guys, and I'm thinking to myself, man, wouldn't that be cool to be, you know, in your 40s or 50s or 60s, you know, still covering the Tennessee Vols? And I remember that, and I'm like, why was I thinking that? And it wasn't about Tennessee; it was just about. But I think I would have been happy doing it though, because that's all you know, and there is, you know, something honorable about, you know, being at one place, but. But that's unusual nowadays, Ashley. And in terms of your friends, do they feel like you do, or is it varied on campus?
Oh, it's definitely varied. People want to move out of Tuscaloosa, so they're very grateful that they had the chance to be around such a program like that. But they want to take it, what they learn to another place. Me, I would love to stay in Tuscaloosa, but if someone offers me a job somewhere else, I would not take it. I would take that opportunity. But I think a lot of students want to get out and see what's out there and see what different sports are, what different programs are like out there and see what it's like.
Well, you work hard for however many years you folks go to school nowadays. And it seems like it gets longer every time I land on a campus. But you should just, you shouldn't pigeonhole it to one thing or other. Actually, finally, we had a gentleman here a minute ago that he was my age, and he talked about how inspired he is to see the changing wave of journalism and everything for that matter. But as somebody who's living it every day, I'm sure it's gratifying because the world that you're experiencing was not the same as your parents and especially your grandparents.
Yeah. It's kind of weird because I really don't think about it too much. When I walk into a room, I'm there to do a job.
Right.
These are my peers. I don't think of it like, oh, I'm a woman. Like, I'm aware, but like, it's not the first thing on my mind. I am very grateful for the opportunities that have been made for the women and all the Black people that have come before me.
Right.
But it's not something that's actively on my mind, but I just go in there, I just do my job, and I take any opportunity that comes to me.
Well, you know, what you just said there, though, is so indicative of, despite what sometimes the media says, of where we are, because I think there's an obsession with issues like this, but the fact that it's not on your mind means that we have succeeded. And I won't predict the future, but it's a really gratifying statement to hear you say that, because you shouldn't have to. That's what your parents and grandparents worked hard to give you, that you're supposed to be where you are because you've earned it.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, there are still issues that are in our industry today, but the fact that it's looked vastly different than what it was even like 5-10 years ago, I'm very grateful for the people that have come before me, and I'm only just focusing on doing my job right now so I can leave it better for the people that are going to come after.
Well, that's a great way. We'll leave it there, but we'll continue this. We try to do this every Friday when we hit campus. I've had countless conversations with some of your friends at Alabama on their podcasts and other vehicles, and I will say I'm worn out by the end of it because it's inspiring to hear the young students, be as curious and inquisitive and as competent as they are. You can tell it's a big thing for me to see your success stories and continue on. And thanks for dropping by. We hope to see you again soon.
Thank you for having us.
We are officially out of time for this program. We appreciate all of you for being a part of it. Some really interesting guests today. We'll see you right here tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.